The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today in the studio, back again, is Nathan Prill. He is the Executive Director of the Huron County Farm Service Agency Office in Bad Axe. Thanks for being with us.
It's great to be back, Craig.
Farming is farming. Every year you plant, you harvest, and you plan ahead. But a lot of that depends on your circumstances, and you try to protect yourself and other programs. And that's where you kind of come in through the government, is you help farmers out.
Right. Well, and especially this year. So with this new farm bill, our farm programs are now, it's not an automatic payment. So payments are based off of commodity prices. So if commodity prices and yields are low, payments from our office are higher. So this year, with the reduced crop prices, and we had some reduced yields during the last growing season, we have sent out record payments from the Huron County office. And Tuscola and Sanilac County are the same. Yields were down, commodity prices were lower, USDA issues record payments. That's really the story that we are facing right now.
And farmers are generally people who just want to make it on their crops. I mean, this is kind of a backup for them. They hedge their bets, so to speak, but they would have preferred better prices and better yields, because that's the business they're in.
Yeah, and these USDA programs, they're really, the most that we can pay is 10% of a five-year average. So for the record payments that we have, it actually reflects record losses for local farmers. The USDA benefit doesn't come close to making up the difference between what farmers would expect to get in a normal year and what they actually received over the last 2 years.
So it gets you over the hump so you can plant next year and hopefully do better.
Well, the difficult thing about this program is the old program that we had under the old farm bill, you knew what your payment was going to be every single year. The payment was the same. You could project it on balance sheets. This new program, we have no idea what the payments are going to be until after we get through the marketing year. So it was a pleasant surprise that the payments threw so much higher. So typically under the old program, our office would issue between $3 and $5 million a year. This year in the month of October, we issued over $12 million in commodity program payments to area farmers. But again, that's only reflecting a small amount of what was actually lost in the area.
But having that kind of guaranteed income, or at least knew what you were expecting to get in the past, helped farmers when they were doing things like planning. If I can buy a new piece of equipment or whatever, I can go to the bank and say, we're anticipating this. This kind of leaves it in the open. You know, there's a range you could get.
Right.
So you know, it while I understand why they're doing it, it may make it a little harder for farmers in their long-term planning.
Sure. Well, and the good thing, so the difficult thing is you don't know what the payment's going to be. The good thing is that it doesn't affect your planting decision. So whether you decide to plant more corn, more wheat, more sugar beets, the payment is going to be based off your historic cropping patterns. So that's one thing that doesn't influence planting decisions in the county, and one of the things that makes the program a little more user-friendly.
Are there things, are people getting into the swing of this new system, or are you still having little hiccups here and there?
We just finished our fourth year of sign-up. Actually, 2018 will be our last year. That's assuming that we don't extend the farm bill for a year, which there have been some whispers on. So assuming the farm bill isn't extended, 2018 will be our last year for this program, and then we will figure out what comes next. You know, Congress will be working on a new farm bill, hopefully, in the next year or so, and we will see what direction we're going to take going into the future. It is a challenging time for government. It's a challenging time for agriculture. It's very different from what we've had over the past 10 years or so.
But I'm sure they'll take a look at how it's worked over the past 4 years. Is it doing what they wanted? Is it targeting the people who need it most? Is it cost effective for the government? All these types of factors will go in, and then they may tweak it the way they do.
Right. And then, of course, the various ag groups will weigh in on kind of how they feel that the programs have worked or not worked. You know, we've had a dairy program that hasn't issued any payments over the past 4 or 5 years during a period of really...
You can talk to dairy farmers and they're not making gobs of money on their milk.
No, no. So the market conditions have been tough and
That's very sarcastic of me right there.
Yeah, just the way the program was designed to take into account feed prices. So since commodity prices dropped, a margin program would seem to indicate that even though milk prices are lower, because commodity prices are lower, there should still be some profit there. Unfortunately, commodity prices aren't the only thing that we factor into figuring out whether or not a dairy operation is profitable, having good times, having bad times. So, yeah, unfortunately, some of these programs work as designed. Some of them have sort of unexpected consequences. The way that the dairy program was designed for this farm bill, it just simply didn't result in any payments, where other programs that we had in previous farm bills would pay out a few million dollars every year in counties like Huron. So, yeah, it's very challenging. On one hand, we had a commodity program that ended up paying maybe a bit more than we expected, and a dairy program that paid far less. It's frustrating. We're really just trying to do the best with what Congress gives us. And
you can only go by the law.
Correct.
You can't sit there and say, oh, we're getting this much money into the county. We'll divvy it up the way we think it should be. It's program-based. This is what you get. And, you know, that's the way it should be. They don't want to make it a local thing where you have to be there. They have to be your best buddy.
Right, right. Well, yeah, the Farm Bill is our guide, and the USDA's interpretation of the Federal Register as far as how Congress wrote the Farm Bill, and implementing that legislation locally is what we do. And yeah, like I said, for commodities, it ended up going very well since 2014. And in dairy, it just didn't. One of the other things we're kind of facing some headwinds with, in the past we enrolled thousands of acres in the Conservation Reserve Program. Well, we had a baseline program that allowed us to do filter strips and a few targeted conservation practices. We also had an enhanced version of that program that allowed us to do wider filter strips and a couple of other different types of seeding. Well, the Michigan incentives went away, and we're facing a 24 million acre cap under this farm bill that we are very close to and perhaps have even exceeded. So right now we have suspended enrollments in the Conservation Reserve Program until we figure out what we have left for acreage or until Congress allocates more land. So right now we are pausing all CRP enrollments in the county. No more new filter strips until we can do a classification on whether or not they're eligible under our current legislation. We just processed about 50 requests, and none of them were eligible based on the new criteria. So this is very different. We've never had this kind of a pause for these environmental practices in the area, but I think maybe there's going to be some frustration from area farmers as everyone realizes that this land, we would pay $200 to $300 an acre for filter strips to keep, you know, sediment and nutrients from going into our watersheds. Based on the current interpretation of law, we are not taking any enrollment in those programs for right now.
But those that are in the program are grandfathered in through the end of their contracts. It's not like they're taking away. It's just you can't add to it.
Correct. So anyone who has a 10 or 15-year contract in effect right now, still good to go. USDA is going to honor those contracts, and we're going to move forward. But yeah, a pause on new enrollments is something that's really new for us. It's been challenging, but hopefully we'll get a good interpretation of what environmental practices we want to install on the land. There will be agreement between all the USDA agencies, growers, interest groups that these acres need to be protected, and then we can go forward enrolling high quality acres in CRP. I hope we should know something hopefully by the spring, and we'll still be able to get some 2018 enrollments once we get some more guidance from Lansing and Washington, D.C.
Now, you were very particular with your words, no new enrollments. Does that mean renewals may go through?
We are processing some renewals, but again, they have to go through that analysis as far as do they meet our eligibility criteria as we understand them to be right now. And we're getting some new understanding on a weekly basis. So we're still...
that sounds very diplomatic.
It seems straightforward that you would know filter strip widths, the type of planting you could... But one of the issues that we're dealing with right now is Washington's interpretation is that these filter strips should be installed next to natural water bodies. Well, in states like Michigan, where we have drainage ditches,
that go into natural bodies like rivers and streams.
We've interpreted that those ditches are eligible. Washington is saying no, and we're trying to figure out the difference. So should CRP only be installed next to rivers in the Chesapeake Bay watershed in Virginia and Maryland? I don't know. But right now, Michigan, Ohio, and some of the Great Lakes states are having some issues because we've installed these filter strips on what we call manipulated drainage ditches, manipulated waterways. One of my coworkers kind of smartly pointed out that the Saginaw River has been dredged. You know, that would not be considered a natural water feature under our current interpretation of things. So,
well, I don't think anything they dredge would be considered natural.
Correct. And so that would be basically almost every...
Because none of those compounds in that dredge is natural. It's all filtered down from the streams that get there and settled there instead of getting into Saginaw Bay.
Correct. Well, I'm hoping we'll get some better guidance on this because the filter strips have been a good practice for Huron County. It's something that we've enjoyed doing. We actually just finished an audit of our CRP program in Huron County, which, you know, audits are always kind of a tense time. And what we found out is that in Huron County, we've done a good job of making sure that maps, I've been talking to you about map updates for years.
But they've gone from, you know, they're now satellite maps. They're very sophisticated, precise, and you get them on a somewhat regular basis every couple of years. So if you see the changes.
Right. Well, some county offices weren't as diligent as far as redrawing these farms, making sure the acreages were correct, making sure the land classifications were correct. So we did a great job with that. We did a great job on our contracts, making sure everybody signed where they were supposed to sign. One of the areas where we got into a little bit of trouble, and this is across Michigan, but on these CRP contracts, we need to be doing something called mid-contract management. So if participants are listening and they are not sure what I'm talking about, they should probably stop by the office. But what it is not just mowing, but at some point during that 10 or 15 year contract, going in there and doing something a little bit more intense, disking or spraying an herbicide, perhaps even burning. Some farmers have had some good success with burning CRP acres. And what that does is it keeps brush and trees and other weeds, certainly, from taking over these set aside acres.
Phragmites come to mind.
Phragmites is a whole nother thing.
Because they're hard to kill even with fire, but okay.
Very, very difficult and have been very invasive in CRP. But basically what the state of Michigan and Washington are saying is we need to have high quality. If USDA, if taxpayers are going to pay for these acres, we want them to be the best acres. We don't want them to have weeds. We don't want them to have brush if they're not supposed to have trees or bushes. We want them to look and function the way that they're supposed to. And we're being a little more diligent in making sure that some of those mid-contract management practices are tracked and that participants know what they have to do to stay in compliance with their contract agreement.
So that means farmers may have to get more creative and maybe look a little elsewhere if the programs don't fit them. I know I've had people in here and they've talked about pheasant habitat and
sure.
Such, and they would do programs that way. So they may have to get a little more creative if they want to put their land into something that's going to be long-term set aside type of thing. But your programs are the ones you can deal with and you can talk about, and they're kind of at a halt right now while you've reached your cap, and then they got to figure out going forward how they want to, what type of program they want, what type of land, what type of effect, and maybe even in the end they're going to want to find out some way of testing to see how well it's working.
Sure. Well,
because government loves to have something to say, we've spent this money, this is what it's resulted in. And it's a little hard with filter strips to exactly say how much didn't make it into the Saginaw Bay, like Huron. It's hard, but it's obvious.
Well, and again, you know, dealing with an auditor who technically works for Washington, it's stressful. And she's saying, well, you need to track mid-contract management. You need to make sure that farmers are doing these activities. Because how do you know that your CRP acres in Huron County aren't covered in weeds? I said, hey, look, no farmer wants weeds growing in their filter strip because then they go into the neighbor's fields, they go into their fields. It makes things very much difficult. My explanation was the problem in Huron County is almost that farmers are doing too much to their filter strips. They're not letting the grass grow and keeping the weeds out. They want to mow it. They want their CRP acres to look like a golf course. And that's not how the program was designed either. So we're issuing payments for about $1.7 million in the conservation reserve. That is definitely not paying for, you know, making the area around your pond look nice or making filter strips look like they should look natural. The grass should be tall. It should provide cover for birds and wildlife. But
it's basically habitat that we're trying to restore to a certain level. So that not that it swamps over your field, but, you know, it gives creatures a fighting chance.
Right. So winter cover is something that's important. Nesting cover when birds are during the nesting season. So traditionally we've told farmers that they can't mow within the nesting season, which is in the summer and it ends in August. And it would just seem like the day after the nesting season was over, every farmer would go and mow their CRP acres. So it was kind of the opposite of the problem that Lansing and Washington might have expected. But again, we're trying to implement these national, federal dollars on a local level. And it's just very interesting getting that done here in the area.
When you have a federal program like this, is it tailored regionally? Because we have different needs than Colorado's mountainous and other places where, you know, they might be setting aside land for something. I mean, does it regionalize a bit?
Sure. So, yeah, in the Great Lakes, we had that enhanced program I was talking about, and it allowed us to do more than, so the maximum under just the standard USDA program nationwide, you know, 30 feet minimum. This program allowed us to have a 50-foot minimum and up to 150 feet. So it allowed us to enroll more acres with the understanding that, hey, in the Great Lakes, very environmentally sensitive area, huge concerns with nutrients going into the Great Lakes. Let's increase the width of these filter strips so that we can do a better job of, you know, filtering sediment, nutrients, and that sort of thing. So, yeah, Michigan's special version of that program, though, kind of expired last year, and we're still waiting to see if it will be renewed or under what, how it would look if it was renewed. But right now, yeah, we're just in a holding pattern. So for the last 15, 20 years, we've had a special version. We do not right now, though. But yeah, you're right. Traditionally, we have.
Now, you mentioned we had larger boundaries at points. Did this allow farmers? Because you may plot a field as square, but if you've got a creek or a stream running through it, you may have a little point that comes to, and it's very hard to get a big piece of machinery in there. Did that allow them to make the filter strip maybe a little larger at the end where they couldn't get a machine in anyway?
Right. Well, I feel like I'm being audited again. It's a good question. But yeah, in some cases we squared off fields, and then the auditor would say, well, you exceeded the maximum. And we would come back and argue that there was an average. So we're fighting back and forth. A lot of coffee was drunk. It was just a very interesting process. But yeah, we could, in some cases, as long as we didn't exceed our average widths, we could square off fields and just make it a little bit more farmer friendly. So the field made sense. So the field made sense from a farming standpoint and from an environmental standpoint. So both parties could get what they wanted out of it.
Making it easier for the GPS.
Correct.
Than to try and get in these little areas.
Yeah, with technology now, even with auto steer, you know, little portions of fields or, you know, filter strips between power lines. You know, if the poles were set a little bit closer to the road, you know, it'd be a good thing to put a filter strip in there. And I'd advertise that even here a lot in the past. And I'm hoping that we can get back to normal with some of these practices because, you know, getting the environmental benefit of a filter strip and keeping farmers from having to farm on the wrong side of a power pole, it just felt like we were doing a lot of good in that area.
Is this something farmers maybe need to be proactive on, saying, you know, we like this kind of program, you know, talk to your legislator, talk to email the ag department? I mean, is there things, you know, should they get proactive on it? The squeaky wheel gets the grease, so to speak.
Yeah, sort of.
Or do you sometimes dig your own grave when you get too obsessed?
On my level of the food chain, they really don't encourage us to encourage our participants to, you know, call your member of Congress. typically, they want us to stay sort of.
I'm a lot freer at things like this. But.
That's true, yeah. From my standpoint, we do pass a lot of those comments up the chain so that within USDA, at least members of congressional delegations, political appointees understand how these programs are working, what our challenges are, what our strengths are. But yeah, as far as lobbying, they kind of want us to shy away from some of those elements just so we don't get into trouble.
Because, I mean, there's organizations like Farm Bureau and stuff out there. They're always concerned with conservation and such as well. But, again, you've been very diplomatic. You've saved your job. It will be there when you get back to the office after the show is done.
That's a good thing.
Are there are you getting people ready for signups, or is, are we past that? Because we're going to have a new cropping season before you know it, and you don't want it just to be you know, they're getting out in the field and oh gee, I have to tell them what I'm going to do.
Well, we're going to do something a little bit different this year. So in the past, farmers would normally stop by the office in the early spring, complete their contract, their program enrollment, and then report their crops before July the 15th. That's been traditionally how we've done things. What we found, though, is when a farmer comes in April, May, June to sign up for our programs, sometimes maybe they're missing a cash rent agreement or they're missing a landowner signature, and then they have to go and contact their landowners.
And come back,
and they have to go back and forth. So what we're going to do this year, we're trying something different, is we'd like to mail contracts to all of our participants, and it's ambitious. I mean, I feel good right now. We're still before December the 1st. We'd like to mail these contracts out with a note to each farmer saying you need to obtain landowner signatures, cash rent agreements. That way they can get these documents when they normally talk to their landlords, usually around Christmas, around the new year when they're paying rent for 2018. That way they can obtain those signatures then, rather than waiting in April or May, especially for farmers that are dealing with absentee landlords. So they may be around for a few weeks around Christmas, but then they're off to Florida, they're off to California. We spend a lot of time in the office trying to track down people from Georgia, Florida, Nebraska, who don't live in the area but own land in the area and need to certify that, hey, so-and-so is going to be renting their property for 2018. We're going to try and take care of that during this time of the year. So hopefully it'll be a little bit more of a convenience. So we should be sending those letters out hopefully in the next 2 weeks or so, 2-3 weeks. Hopefully all the operators in Huron County will have their contracts by Christmas, by the first of the year.
It's not just a letter. The contract is included with the letter explaining what you need. So it's all the paperwork you need to fill out pretty much.
Sign and return, and then landowners and operators, all they'll have to do is report their crops normally in the summer. And hopefully that will save us a little bit of time. Hopefully.
Is this something farmers still like to manually do? I know there was talk about everybody wanting to be on the internet and doing this, and then I heard there was problems where if you didn't use it every month, your password had to be changed, and it just became more of a hassle. And you'd only do this once or so a year.
Sure.
So it's like, you know, do they really just find the physical form of a paper just kind of helps? I know they want to push you to do more on the internet and not...
Yeah, I think there were different feelings within the agency. Some county offices in Michigan and across the nation feel that it's important that the producers stop by the office. When we do these sorts of activities...
They don't have the volume you have.
True.
They may have one or two major producers of corn in Iowa or something in their county that... covers right. Most of it.
Yeah, for us, we know that we're going to see them during certification. We know our operators. We've hired a lot of new staff, and they're still learning some of the names and faces. But even with their background, they do have ag backgrounds. So we know who these people are, especially when you get into the last year of a farm bill. And so I feel comfortable mailing to operators that we have established relationships with. They've been in every year. They're still going to come in for crop certification. Hopefully someday they'll be able to certify crops online. We're not quite there yet, but at least for this purpose, like, this is all about being farmer friendly, landowner friendly, making sure that Huron County certification is one of the smoothest in the state of Michigan. This is about us trying to get ahead of the work, so we're just doing a better job. If farmers talk to their landowners in the first of the year, farmers should know what signatures they need before they get into their planting season. Trying to do this during planting season or during the growing season in general, it is in some cases just a lot to ask.
And there can be amendments. I know you don't like it, but say you file all this in December or January, whatever, and you know your landlord passes away, they're retired and down in Florida. It can be amended to the new landlord. I mean, these things can be done that way, but once it's in, at least you know you're in the program.
Correct. Well, and it's also easier for us because if you stop by the office on July the 1st and we find out that two of your landlords are deceased, even if the ownership isn't resolved, it's still better to know about that, you know, assuming that they passed by January, to get ahead of some of this so that we're just doing a better job.
No, it allows you to, if there's any research that needs to be done before you finalize things, you have it to do at your leisure, because certain times of the year, your office gets a little bit busy.
Well, and this is a good time of year. If farmers know that there have been land ownership updates, if they purchased a piece of property, if they want to look at their maps and change boundaries, this is the time of year that we can handle that workload. So if farmers are thinking, yeah, I've looked at my maps the last couple of years, there's a few things that need to be squared up, there's a few wind turbine driveways that haven't been drawn out, this is the time of year that we can fix that without too many troubles.
And as I remember this, and correct me if I'm wrong, the program we went to in the last Farm Bill, if you want to be part of any of these programs, you need to do the crop insurance route?
Not so much for the traditionally with the old disaster programs that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you did have a crop insurance requirement with it. We don't really do disaster programs so much anymore. We have some programs for like crops that aren't insured under crop insurance. But really, right now, risk management and disaster management is handled through insurance products. We have some insurance products for crops that are not covered. And then everything else that's covered through commercial crop insurance, it's just an expectation that farmers will obtain that on their own.
Okay. And if they have questions, contact your office. You'll explain it to them, which ones are you can handle and which ones you need to find privately, because your crop may or may not be such a specialty crop that it's not available.
Well, in Huron County, so Michigan...
We're diversifying in Huron County.
It's different.
I mean, we think of, you know, sugar beets and corn and such, but we've got vineyards, we've got all kinds of things. Hops are being grown around here, and organic stuff, and it's despite the fact that we were heavily into some crops, it is diversifying.
Well, in Michigan is a specialty state. We have a lot of specialty crops. So around the state, a lot of county offices do a lot of these insurance products for crops that are not covered through commercial policies. Huron County really was not a leader in that. We did not have a lot of specialty crops, but increasingly we have a few acres of garlic. We have a few acres of lavender. We have some grapes in the area. And as you said, organic as well, which is a separate, it's a different type of certification. We can report organic crops now within the office. So we're adapting to Huron County having some more specialty crops. But yeah, traditionally Huron County has functioned almost more like a county in Illinois or Indiana or Iowa, the I states as they call them, just because we were so intensively dairy, row crop. We're starting to see some different things, though. It's very interesting, and I think we're going to see more trends towards that in the future.
Is part of that maybe because we're so much surrounded by water? It gives us more microclimates, so to speak, where grapes for wine are good here, and like they are in Traverse City area and such, that, you know, people are just finding out that what you grow here, specialty, comes out really good.
I have heard some discussions on Huron County's microclimate, but I guess I can't claim to be too much of an expert on it. I would be interested, and I think there is a fair amount of support for specialty crops in the Thumb, and I don't think we've even begun to the process as far as where we'll end up with specialty crops. I think in 10, 20 years, you'll see more organic. You will see more, I've heard someone in the area started milking goats.
We have an alpaca farm near Ubley. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, non-traditional things going on.
And it's interesting. I'm excited to see what USDA can come up with as far as how do we support these activities. We've traditionally been very good. I don't work so much specifically on loans. We do some loans through the office. We do the commodity loans and the farm storage loans, but the actual operating, beginning farmer, that sort of stuff, you know, I don't work on that specifically, but our office does, and we have loan folks in the office. I think you're going to start to see a little bit more advertising, a little bit more knowledge as far as what USDA can do for someone who's interested in starting a specialty crop, maybe doesn't have access to commercial credit, and just wants to try something different. And I think that'll be good.
They're generally more smaller scale, tend to be.
Sure.
And, you know, it's one way of getting usually younger people into farming.
Sure. Well, market now. Maybe in 10 years we'll have 1,000 acres of wine grapes and you'll be advertising the Huron County Wine Tour or something like that. You never know where these trends are going to take us. We're living in a really interesting time. We have more technology. We have more access to software and programs that allow us to do a much better job with agronomy, with seed. The technology that is in the cab of a tractor now is incomprehensible, would have been incomprehensible to previous generations. So it's a difficult time in agriculture right now. Commodity prices are lower, but sometimes these crisis periods are opportunities for people who maybe want to try something different, maybe want to get started, but couldn't get started when commodity prices were really high, couldn't compete with $7 corn.
And it's very difficult to go into big farming unless you've inherited it, because it's just cost prohibitive to buy all the equipment, buy all the animals, buy all the to get yourself started. Whereas if you start out smaller in a specialty crop, it lends itself to grow.
Sure. And I know of some folks who've started up at the Port Austin Farmers Market and have expanded. The farmers market process, the growth of that has been very interesting. The support, the local support for specialty crops is really interesting as well. And I don't know if that's being driven by those of us who live kind of in the interior of the county or if it's more of a shoreline tourism thing, but we'll take it any way that we get it. There is a lot of room for growth in specialty crops. And that paired with technology, I've seen some interesting things with drones. We have Thumb Ag Day, of course, coming up here in the next couple of weeks, which is kind of the premier event for those of us in agriculture. So I'm always excited to see who's going to have a booth there, who's going to be set up. It's a very interesting time for us.
And everyone checks in with your office to see what's available and what's not. So you kind of hear about it on the cusp as it happens.
Well, we do see, like I said, when we started getting farmers coming in and reporting grapes, lavender, catnip, garlic, it was just sort of there was more of a realization that this is happening. It's happening. And whether it's driven by tourism along the shore or whether it's folks on the interior of the county wanting to support the local food movement, my sense is that it's happening just based off the information I'm seeing in the office.
And a lot of the success can be derived from like our soil and such. I can tell a Michigan apple from a Washington one. No crop. I grew up near the Romeo area, and they have apples there, and you can give me one of those and one from anywhere else in the country, I'll tell you which one, because every area has their own taste. And if Huron County can devise, you know, products and stuff that our soil and conditions around here give them an edge that way, that's when they'll boom.
Sure, sure. Well, and in the meantime, hopefully technology will be able to bridge, you know, if we can find some efficiencies as far as seed, fertilizer, precision plant, precision application of herbicides and pesticides, that's going to help the bottom line of our large growers too. So technology may be, you know, one of those saving, it may make our operations more efficient, more competitive. And as we get more competitive and more efficient, you know, even when commodity prices are lower, hopefully that can be sort of a bridge just to get through until we see maybe some higher prices, just some relief on that side as well.
Okay. Other things coming up they need to know about?
No, we're really just working on farm record updates. We're still clearing up some of the final payments, still waiting on some paperwork from some individuals.
Well, the paperwork never ends.
Never ends. Stacks of paper everywhere. We have just finished fall certification, so November the 15th was the deadline for reporting wheat, alfalfa, and mixed hay in the county.
Those were your results, or what you intend to plant next year?
It's actually what's in the ground right now. So all the fall seeded.
For the winter wheat crop and such.
Totally different from how it used to be. The deadline for that used to be in the spring, but they wanted us to align with crop insurance because crop insurance is what we're doing for risk management, disaster management. So now we report all hay and wheat, fall seeded small grains by November the 15th.
Hmm. Well, that spreads it out a little more too. Have that big spring rush with everything. You can get some of it taken out of the way.
The problem is that you have to get the folders out twice, then it ends up being a lot more work for us, but it does give us accurate information going into the first of the year as far as what has been planted, whereas before we wouldn't have had that information until really the end of June. So it's just more about, we have this record.
The time they're taking it off.
Correct. Correct. So yeah, that probably had something to do with it as well. But yeah, we have those records. We had a good response rate. It's taken us 3 or 4 years to get farmers sort of trained to, it's been this way for a long time, but now you need to come in and report your crops after you plant them, or hay or alfalfa that's existing. And the response rates get better every year.
Okay.
A lot less wheat this year, though. I don't know if that's kind of the leading edge of, sort of depressed crop prices. But I know as farmers are making planning decisions this year, there's just not a lot of great options out there right now. So December is usually a low commodity price time of year. Hopefully as we get into winter, I don't know. You never wish bad on anybody, but a little drought here in Brazil or a little too much rain in the Ukraine, and we'll see crop prices come up.
That's the funny part about it. Not so funny if you're on the bad end of it, but disasters elsewhere can be a boon to you and vice versa. And while you don't want to see, your fellow farmers in the middle part of the country, in dire straits, because we're very good at sending hay and other stuff down. We have convoys and stuff that go down. We did it for the hurricanes and stuff, and people who had animals out there. But you do want the best for yourself. I mean, that's the whole point, is to get the best yield out of all the effort you put into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like I said, this is just it's one of those really challenging times. And so I mean, we see it in the office as far as conversations that farmers are having as far as, economically, is this working? Maybe we haven't been making money for the last year or two. What does year three look like? What's going to change? What are we going to do differently? And I know there are going to be a lot of sort of difficult discussions in the area over the next couple of months. And we always, just the same way you sort of hope and pray for good weather in the summer, this is the time of year where you pray
good weather for the tourists is not necessarily the good weather for the farmers.
True, true. Yeah, we pay for good weather as far as, timely rain, a good storm every once in a while.
And it can rain on the west side of the county and not on the east side. And, farmers are almost in drought conditions, and you can drive there to go to the restaurant.
Yeah, if you want to talk about microclimates, it's been interesting working in Huron County, because we'll get these really odd weather patterns where we can request a disaster declaration from the governor's office if a portion of farmers have a 30% loss. And when we've been able to do that just based off a few farmers. Remember a couple of years ago we had that rain system that just sat over Bad Axe on a Sunday evening and just rained and rained and rained, didn't really go anywhere else in the county. So we always seem to have these pockets. It seems like Huron County basically has a disaster declaration nearly every year, because we always have some weird rain that goes through or weird wind that goes through. And that's just farming in the thumb.
But I think most of them would say I wouldn't have it any other place, any other way. Makes it challenging, makes it interesting. It's not boring or humdrum.
As the agency talks about consolidating offices, allocating staff, I will sit in the staff meetings. I say there's nothing better than being surrounded by water on three sides. It from a government standpoint, from an office standpoint, it just makes things nice.
Well, I appreciate you taking time with us. Again, have yourself a great holiday season. And after the first of the year, people need to start coming in on those contract things you're going to be sending out in the mail. So don't be freaked when you get it.
No,
read the letter, and it'll explain why you're sending it out, and you're hoping to get a little jump start, a head start on people who come in and, oops, I didn't have that, and have to come back and get it all done the first time.
We're trying to do a better job. We're just, in this time, when things are difficult, when things are uncertain, all you can do is try to get a little better every year. And, if you can successfully accomplish that, that's the way to weather these sorts of times. So I'm going to take the advice that the farmers have taught me, get a little better every year, and hope for the best.
Are these types of things, like sending the letters out, is this stuff that if you find it's a good result that you share with others around the state in your business, that maybe you want to try this if you have a large volume? I mean, is there a forum where you folks share what works and what hasn't really helped?
Yeah, we have district meetings. Traditionally, it's kind of difficult to put the thumb in a district. So we've gone with Southern Michigan. Sometimes we've gone with the center of the state. The district that we have now encompasses sort of Bay County, Saginaw County, where you know, has sort of similar cropping patterns, dry edible beans, sugar beets. So the district that we have now really for row crops is the area of Michigan where it's most productive. So we are making plans for, this is the last year of the farm bill. We don't know what the future holds. Get everything in order, you know, sort of batten the hatches and just get ready for whatever's going to happen. We have a new presidential administration. We have a new farm bill coming up. So this is a time to be competent and be doing a good job. Same in agriculture as it is in government, which hasn't always been the case. So it's not all bad. It's not all bad.
But you have to plan ahead. And if you don't know if you're going to have a new farm bill or an extension, you just kind of have to plan ahead with what you've got now and hope enough of it fits the new one to make it work at least the first year, because you just can't wait until you know or don't know and then have that whole big rush.
That's exactly right.
Well, again, thanks for being with us. And if people have questions, your office number is?
269-9549.
Extension 2, I believe.
Yep, extension 2.
And then somebody in the office will answer their questions or schedule a time they can come in and get all their answers, a scheduled time where they can get all their answers face-to-face if that's the way they prefer.
That's exactly right.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll clue you in on all the latest in the news. Just keep it right here.